in the study of the Divine Comedy, when I first had his incomparable aid in the understanding of it. During the last year of his life, he read the proofs of this volume, to what great advantage to my work may readily be conceived. When, in the early summer of this year, the printing of the Purgatory began, though illness made it an exertion to him, he continued this act of friendship, and did not cease till, at the fifth canto, he laid down the pencil forever from his dear and honoured hand. Charles Eliot Norton, Cambridge, Massachusetts, 1st of October, 1891. The text followed in this translation is in general that of Witter. In a few cases, I've preferred the readings which the more recent researches of the Reverend Dr. Edward Moore of Oxford seem to have established as correct. Introduction. So many versions of the Divine Comedy exist in English that a new one might well seem needless. But most of these translations are in verse, and the intellectual temper of our time is impatient of a transmutation in which substance is sacrificed for form's sake, and the new form is itself different from the original. The conditions of verse in different languages vary so widely as to make any versified translation of a poem but an imperfect reproduction of the archetype. It is like an imperfect mirror that renders but a partial likeness, in which essential features are blurred or distorted. Dante himself, the first modern critic, declared that nothing harmonized by a musical bond can be transmuted from its own speech without losing all its sweetness and harmony. And every fresh attempt at translation affords a new proof of the truth of his assertion. Each language exhibits its own special genius in its poetic forms. Even when they are closely similar in rhythmical method, their poetic effect is essentially different. Their individuality is distinct. The hexameter of the Iliad is not the hexameter of the Aeneid. And if this be the case in respect to related forms, it is even more obvious in respect of forms peculiar to one language, like the terza rima of the Italian, for which it is impossible to find a satisfactory equivalent in another tongue. If then the attempt be vain to reproduce the form or to represent its effect in a translation, yet the substance of a poem may have such worth that it deserves to be known by readers who must read it in their own tongue or not at all. In this case, the aim of the translator should be to render the substance fully, exactly, and with as close a correspondence to the tone and style of the original as is possible between prose and poetry. Of the charm, of the power of the poem, such a translation can give but an inadequate suggestion. The musical bond was of its essence, and the loss of the musical bond is the loss of the beauty to which form and substance mutually contributed, and in which they were both alike harmonized and sublimated. The rhythmic life of the original is its vital spirit, and the translation losing this vital spirit is at best as the dull plaster cast to the living marble or the breathing bronze. The intellectual substance is there, and if the work be good, something of the emotional quality may be conveyed. The imagination may mould the prose as it moulded the verse. But after all, translations are but as turn-coated things at best, as Howell said in one of his familiar letters. No poem in any tongue is more informed with rhythmic life than the Divine Comedy, and yet such is its extraordinary distinction, no poem has an intellectual and emotional substance more independent of its metrical form. Its complex structure, its elaborate measure and rhyme, highly artificial as they are so mastered by the genius of the poet as to become the most natural expression of the spirit by which the poem is inspired, while at the same time the thought and sentiment embodied in the verse is of such import and the narrative of such interest that they do not lose their worth when expressed in the prose of another tongue. They still have power to quicken imagination and to evoke sympathy.